Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political right my favorite Republican, Senator Dan McKay.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Brad Wilson. Hey, everybody!
And we have on the political left, George Pyle, the opinion editor for the Salt Lake Tribune. Welcome, George.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I was so happy to hear I was on the show with you today. I've admired your work for a long time, so we're happy you're here.
Oh, thank you.
I haven't really admired his work. I'm just going to be very honest.
Okay.
I have admired
He's
George.
He's a terrific writer.
He wears a beard better than most anybody I know next to our producer, right?
No.
But, you know, I have been the subject of some of his
wit.
Thank you.
Great
That's
writing.
A very good wit.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. George, he writes in tandem with his colleague Tim Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Am I getting this right?
Yes.
The House editorials that come out of the Tribune. And
right.
I wanted to just share this story with you, George, as we go into opinion commentary. But one time I was in Washington, D.C., getting on a tour bus, a private tour bus that Senator Lee was kind of taking a group of business leaders around downtown D.C. Mm-hmm. And I heard a group of them complaining about this columnist. It wasn't you, but just a columnist, and how biased this person was, and how they say they're independent, and then look at what they write. And I'm just kind of going, I'm a lot younger than you are, but I kind of know the difference between the newsroom and the editorial board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, you know, tell our listeners just why do people confuse these two?
Yeah, I don't. There are people who work for newspapers who aren't fully cognizant, I think, of the difference sometimes. I mean, we think we're pretty obvious about it. It says opinions in great big letters at the top of the page. And
how dare you hide it?
Letters to the editor are signed by whoever wrote them.
Yeah.
Op-ed columns are signed and have often the photograph of the person.
A little bio,
who wrote it.
Whatever.
So it should be obvious that this letter writer, this columnist, is speaking for themselves and expressing their opinion. Their, you hope, informed, considered opinion, but their opinion. And then the House editorials, which most newspapers have, don't have a signature on them, but they are the official institutional position of the editorial board of the newspaper. And generally, sometimes, I mean, the history of this is kind of that, you know, it's what the publisher wants to say or what the editor of the newspaper wants to say. And so there's no byline on them because they're more of a committee thing.
Yeah.
Usually one person
I always
sits
think
down.
Of them as the conscience of the community.
Well, that's the hope, yeah.
You know, and that you're speaking out and saying the things that others don't dare say, that the conscience is speaking to you. Yeah. Dan is like grimacing.
Well, William Allen White, as an old Kansan, William Allen White said that a good editorial says what everybody thinks, but nobody's actually said because they haven't thought it through.
And the editorial, that's nice.
And I always think it's the editorial says what a crazy old person in the back hallway of some grocery store would say.
Who's never done anything.
Done anything. Never had
Dan,
to run a bill.
Dan, have you been a target? No. In fairness, have you been a target of some of these?
It's fair, right?
Okay.
Like, political people are fair game. We all are.
Yeah, you got to have thick skin.
If you walk into this with very thin and brittle skin about what people say, you're going to hate it. Right?
So have you ever, I'm trying to get us a nice segue to the President of the United States. Have you ever found yourself saying that's fake news?
Yes,
okay.
I have.
Okay.
But I have said that, but I can understand where, again, absent any other inside knowledge, you could come to that conclusion, right? And that's probably my biggest beef with like opinion stuff is it leaves out so much of the story and you're trying to balance all these other things. And if you could take out one slice of the pie and only talk about that one thing.
Which they get to do.
Certainly.
Yeah.
That's a problem. But you throw it in the bigger pie and it makes
it
a big sense.
It gets more complicated.
Yeah.
Hey, well, so going to the President of the United States, I want to get to Iran and what our President Donald Trump has done this week. I never thought I'd see the day that there would be maybe, let's just say, a threatened strike against a country and that, you know, with 10 minutes to go, the president would change his mind and then announce it on Twitter.
Mm.
I'm an informal person, but there's something about national defense and, you know, taking up arms that to me—
A little more serious.
Needs the dignity of an address to the American people or a statement that's read with some— you know, solemnity, and we get tweets.
Yeah.
Well, and then, go ahead,
well,
I'm George.
Well, as little as I think of the president, the fact that Twitter exists is not his fault. That is kind of the way we communicate these days.
We should blame it on him. But.
Well, and I will say that of all the social media things, I enjoy Twitter the most.
Yeah, I do too, even though
it's just,
for some
just
reason—
It's just headlines to me.
It Facebook makes money, Twitter doesn't. I don't understand that. But I follow a lot of people on Twitter, people I agree with and people I don't. And mostly on Twitter, I follow other journalists, newspapers, politicians. Mm-hmm.
Newsmakers.
Newsmakers. Yeah. On Facebook, it's more, for me, it's more personal friends, relatives, things like that. If you're going to commit an act of war, even if it's totally justified, the idea that you just kind of throw it off in a tweet and then you say, well, I was all set to do this and then I decided not to with 10 minutes left to go because only at the very last second did I realize that this might kill somebody.
Yeah. And I got my estimate and I decided it wasn't a proportional response. And next issue.
And then he's blaming, like, people who work for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they're not trustworthy enough to give you the information when it's still time to make an informed decision, maybe they shouldn't work for you. Maybe you should get somebody else.
Dan, are you at all nervous that we're playing with fire here with a country like Iran and giving them the finger like this?
If people didn't recognize beforehand that the war drums were beating over Iran after the downed drone, like, they're missing something, right? They haven't been paying attention.
I mean, they're giving us the finger in all fairness.
They are. Yeah. They are. The war drums are beating over Iran.
By the way, I held up my hand to show finger, but I didn't really do it.
Yeah, she kind of did one of those read between the lines, which I thought was, you know, it's very classic.
Very Natalie.
Very Natalie. So the war drums are beating over Iran, and they have been in the Middle East for a long time, and it's not going to change. I will say, I think that if this had been a Clinton president, I think we'd be in the middle of a war today as opposed to talking about how ridiculous the president is for his Twitter behavior. That said, having might and having the ability to use it and then the wherewithal to then execute is a totally different executive function that I don't think most of America understands at all.
Yeah,
myself included.
It drives
me
nuts that we have a government with responsibility to look after our national security here, and we have an acting Homeland Security Secretary, an acting Department of Defense Secretary. Thank goodness we have someone sitting in the Secretary of State, but I don't understand why they can't get their act together and get leadership.
Well, I think there's a lot of people pulling in different directions, and I think people who don't despise Donald Trump look at him and say that he's got these pulling image instincts that
sure.
he's got. Part of him
he,
is
he
kind
does
of,
these things where he says, I've got hawks that work for me and doves that work for me, and I like it that way because then I'm the decider.
Right. And but even within himself, there is an isolationist Trump who, you know, builds walls and withdraws from international agreements and completely misunderstands the function of NATO and all that kind of stuff. And it's an isolationist kind of instinct that seems to be real. And then on the other hand, he surrounds himself with the John Boltons of the world who can hardly wait to drop a cruise missile on somebody.
Interesting.
And I think we were well served by the fact that apparently at the very last minute, he decided not to. Does that mean that John Bolton's going to quit? Or is he going to stick around because the president and other people think, well, just because I don't take his advice every time doesn't mean he's useless.
Look, for everybody talking about Trump being a happy finger, ready to start a war, he's a bully, he's all these other things.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand
diplomacy, international affairs, yada, yada, yada. But he did get one thing right. An unmanned down drone should not equate to a few hundred lives, right? Yeah. And as people are trying to do the math of what targets might have been, I think Donald Trump did the right thing. And I think we need to look, this was the right thing to have happen, but it sent a clear message to Iran. Look, my finger's on the trigger. Yeah. Do it again.
Yeah. It's unclear to me how you unwind this, though, because you've got these sanctions. You've got their economy in shambles. Yeah. We don't have an agreement anymore about proliferation. Is that the right
we
word
had
for
an
reducing
agreement.
The nukes?
We had an agreement that the European powers still want to be part of, but with the United States not part of it anymore, I don't know how well it's going to work. And there are leaders in both countries who have constituencies who expect them to be bellicose.
Yeah.
And if they do anything that is like reasonable and nonviolent than they hear from their own constituencies that they're caving in.
Yeah. George, we don't like to spend all this time talking about President Trump, but we have. And so just right before break, really quickly, the president really got under my skin this week when he was accused of a sexual abuse situation. And he said, well, first of all, she's not my type. You know, and then second of all, I think I didn't do it or something. Come on.
No, I think, I mean.
It was inartful.
It was. And well, I might double down on that, Dan. I just say that is offensive.
Well, it is. And it's his whole attitude toward women. I think it just screams all the time. I mean, the idea that, and his, you know, some of his supporters on Facebook and things will launch pictures of people he supposedly raped, and they'll say, and the underlying theme being they're not pretty enough that anybody would want to do that, and that it didn't, you know, the belief that that's what it's about, that somebody would rape somebody because they're pretty and not if they aren't, when it has nothing to do with sexual attraction. It has to do with power and abuse and doing whatever you want to do.
Dan,
I have just
go ahead.
I will just say I am so grateful, you know, in this whole all this crap about, you know, the president's sexual life. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I've never been in his shoes where, you know, to have been accused and that kind of thing. I don't know how anybody would react, false or otherwise, in that situation. I'll just say, I hope I don't react like that.
Yeah, it was a problem. We're going into break. I'm with George Pyle and Dan McKay's Natalie Gochner. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
I'm George Pyle on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to talk about student loans. Dan, you told me off air that you still have some student loans.
I still do.
And people may not know your age, but mid-40s.
Yeah, I'm 45. Okay. It's on the Senate website. Okay. You know, come on. There was nothing private about my life at this point. Go Google it. It's all there. So that said, 45 years old, I graduated law school almost 20 years ago now. And everybody's like, well, how could you still have student loan debt? It's because back then, you know, before a bunch of other federal intervention that screwed up interest rates, before that happened, you could refinance your loans out of law school at like 1%. And then through UHIA, you get a benefit for prepayment of loans back at the time, I think if you prepaid 6 months, you could actually get like 0.3% off. So my finance rate is 0.07 on my student loans. Now, the funny thing is, my wife and I have debated several times. She's like, just pay those off. This is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Writing the check every month. And honey, you're right. It is ridiculous. But if Senator Sanders has his way to cancel student loans,
you would be proven right.
We are going somewhere special with that money, okay? Just, I know you're listening to this right now. Just be thinking about that. That's what we're doing.
George, I'm all for making it easy to do the right thing, go to college, you know, provide student aid and different things. But I don't believe in this carte blanche erasing of commitments that were made by these students.
Well, I think it's one of those things where you think, how did they get into this? And I mean, people who don't have 0.07% loans
are
a lot higher.
That's true.
And you can blame the government, you can blame the banks, but there's a lot of greed involved, and there's a lot of mess, and there's a lot of factors that, like, while we're sharing ages, I'm 62, and when
I still have student loans?
No, I never had student loans.
Oh, okay.
It was $600 to go to a semester of college. When I, you know, who couldn't pay for that?
Yeah.
I mean,
riding the horse and buggy
at the
campus.
I mean, my ride, and I'm like. Most people I know who are my age, either their parents paid for it, and or they had a summer job.
Yeah,
and you just worked at the grocery store, at the McDonald's, at the greenhouse for the summer, and that was all the money you needed. You could Yeah, you could pay
different.
For college.
It's different.
And now you can't. And it's kind of the same thing like with healthcare. And there is an argument there that, you know, loans and insurance where you're hidden from the cost and such things. So the prices go up because while you're receiving the healthcare or while you're in school, you're not really paying it. You pay it later or it affects other people down the road or the interest rates go up or insurance premiums go up.
Yeah.
Because you're sheltered from the immediate cost. But we've created this society where if you're going to make much of a living, they expect you to have a degree. More of us ought to, you know, learn how to fix cars and fix air conditioners. But they expect you to have a degree. And at the same time, they say, oh, and by the way, you'll be heavily in debt for the rest of your life. We can do better than that.
Yeah, I would agree there. I find it interesting how Sanders, Bernie Sanders, you know, is so good at creating a talking point or a soundbite out of something like this. He says, you know, my plan completely eliminates student debt in this country and the absurdity of sentencing an entire generation to a lifetime of debt for doing the right, for the crime of doing the right thing. I don't know.
It's interesting for you, Natalie, though, right? You work in an institution of higher ed, right?
Benefits from this.
Yeah, benefits from...
There's a huge equity problem here.
Yeah, huge.
So that's the first thing that pops up in my mind is that, okay, we're doing it here. We didn't do it for all these years.
Yeah.
But the other one is just we don't have the money.
Right.
We got to find other ways to do this.
Does China want to pay our student loans?
Yeah, that's what would be happening.
Well, I mean, he and Elizabeth Warren do have...
Some tax increases.
Do have some tax increases.
Some revenue enhancements.
On people that probably wouldn't even notice if the tax increase went through.
Spoken like a great liberal, George.
And so, I mean, there's plenty of money out there. And because, you know, we built the greatest industrial giant in the history of the galaxy when marginal tax rates were as high as 90%.
Interesting.
And
again, spoken like a true liberal.
And spoken like Dwight Eisenhower, who grew up just down the road from me.
hey, let's go from the D.C. and the president and candidates, and let's come to Salt Lake City. And a lot of news being made out of the Salt Lake City mayor's office. Let's start with the easy one. Mayor Biskupski has her legal team. They've asked for a preliminary injunction on the inland port. They basically want to freeze it in place until a decision's made. Dan, you're the attorney. What do you read into that? They have a lawsuit, and they've amended it now to ask for an injunction.
Yeah.
Which is like hold in place.
But first of all, I was surprised the first complaint didn't include, right? I mean, that's kind of standard
what
operating
happened
procedure,
there,
right?
Yeah.
Ask for an injunction or something. The problem is, I'll bet, I don't know for sure, but I'll bet that they knew there was unlikely that the courts would ever do anything like that. I mean, at the end of the day, courts are not going to give an injunction generally to stop land use, to stop things moving forward. The courts are really slow to get in the way of things like that because there's a way, again, legislature meets in January, you know, courts know that. At the end of the day, this could be fixed pretty easily, whatever the enjoining cause might be, and therefore it would be a moot issue. That said, like, again, this just shows Jackie wants to continue to double down on her inability to negotiate and ability to try and drive solutions for what will be a benefit to the state and what will be a benefit to the city of Salt Lake. And instead, she just wants to continue digging. You know, one of the number one ways out of a hole is to stop digging. It's the first step.
George, there is some interpretation here that would say, okay, Mayor Biskupski is not a candidate now. That takes away some of the, you know, political lens that a decision like this could be made under. But then, of course, you've got candidates that she may want to support, some that she may not. Do you see any political move here in terms of favoring some of the candidates?
Well, it does seem like, I haven't followed it as closely as I should, but it does seem like candidates who have sort of been, well, we can work this out, are now following along in the current mayor's, no, we can't work this out. We've got to sue them because they're doing us dirty and we've got to stand up and do something about it. And there is always a thing. I mean, I've worked in several states and the idea that the state can tell the city what to do, period, no recourse, is pretty common. Is the idea that, I mean, constitutionally, there's the federal government and there's the states, and the cities are all creatures of the state. So if the state tells the cities they have to paint all their city halls purple, then the cities have to do it. And if the state tells the city, we're going to take this big hunk of your land and we're going to control the zoning and we're going to control the land use and we're going to control the tax increment, that's the end
that's
of it.
What I, that's what I was taught, but I never went to law school.
Has the final word. There's also, though, Ted Wilson told me about, I didn't know this, there's a clause in the state constitution that says something about how the state can't take revenue sources away from cities. Mm-hmm. And whether that, I would assume that that's what they're hanging their
Yeah, there's got to be some
on.
Angle there.
I don't know.
Kate, other
yeah,
news?
Yeah, well, I'd hate to highlight the fact that a lot of city revenue comes through the state's coffers and we change it all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah. All the time.
And no one seems to complain about it then. So yeah. I'll go look at it. Hey, this is yeah.
Well, no, that's why it. I mean when this first came up and our editorial board view was one, there is one reason for this and one reason only. The legislature knows that if the city maintains control, the city will give a rat's ass about the environment mm-hmm. and the state won't. Period. That's it. The other thing is there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
The state has control.
Okay, other news coming out of City Hall.
Yeah, okay. It's Salt Lake City. We can say whatever we want.
I was following my Twitter feed and somebody, I don't even know who it was, I must follow, but had tweeted, you know, don't come to El Rancho or whatever, Rancho Markets, you know, today there's ICE officers at the door. And that was my first indication that like, oh, this is a weekend that feels, you know, like there's some activity going on in terms of deportations and whatnot. Have no idea, but right after that, I get a little news tweet from a news organization saying that the mayor has basically said we're not cooperating with the ICE officers. We're not going to enforce federal immigration policy as the Salt Lake PD. No surprise there, Dan.
A lot of disappointment.
Really, I actually like the mayor's policy there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I get it, and I'd love to hear your thoughts here. You know, again. They want to file an injunction because we violated some law in the Constitution, and they want to fight because there's a law, and they must uphold this law, but not this other one, right? I have a real problem
when—
There
could be bad laws.
No question, but and there are lots of them, by
okay.
the way.
Just,
a gaggle of
it
them.
It took me a while to learn that, but I'm sort of like, it's not about being law-abiding all the
time. Well, that's why we pass almost 500 bills every year, right?
Yeah.
But that said, it is hard when you have a law enforcement. See, this is totally different than like your legislative body or your executive body. When you have a law enforcement purpose and you are given a selective set of rules to enforce and then these rules you don't enforce, I think that is a tough culture for law enforcement to function in.
Mm-hmm. Well, the function then, what law enforcement doesn't want to do, local law enforcement does not want to be ICE. They know if they're the feds, if they're the narcs, if they're immigration, every source, every reported crime,
take care of
every neighborhood that they go into, they're shut out. They
won't
talk to them.
But you know this better than anybody.
Yeah.
You want to change a bankrupt law? Enforce it. Abraham Lincoln said it. Okay?
Yeah.
And the key to changing bankrupt laws is actually letting the law be in effect. And that's how stuff breaks. And that's how you undo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is you get a guy like me who's in the legislature, and one of his neighbors comes to him and says, hey, they're enforcing this law in my neighborhood, and it's absolutely a horrible idea. And you think about it and say, yeah, that's
Dan,
right, and you go fix it.
We got 3 minutes left in the program, but you've got, you're readying legislation to eliminate elective abortions in the state.
Are we going to talk about abortions in 1.5 minutes? Look,
it
let's
be
just,
your gripe
I'll agree, let's
want.
Just talk about it next week.
I just thought it'd be
week.
Fun. Okay. Yeah.
Let's, we'll agree, we'll talk about it. I'm happy to have George back because he's been phenomenal.
George, any quick comment there? You going to let him get away with that?
Well, abortion is safe, legal, and rare, or women are second-class citizens,
right.
Period. That's it.
All right, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to leave that alone. Here's what I will say.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'm walking or I'm driving mm-hmm. or I'm doing whatever, and I'm constantly asking myself, in 25 years from now, what will people be looking back at us and saying, I can't believe we did X?
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I came to the realization myself that my answer to that was, I can't believe we're preventing gay people from being married.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I can't believe we're preventing them from having benefits. I can't believe XXX. Mm-hmm. I can't believe those things,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And look where we are. I cannot believe mm-hmm. that in 25 years from now, somebody's going to look back and say, you know, it's a really good idea. We should just allow people to pick and choose who lives.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of anything else, we should allow someone else to make a choice about someone else's life. And I have to tell you, outside of the medical profession whose primary job is to do no harm,
this is the practice. I think in 25 years from now,
the people we're
gonna
say that about.
We are going to say that about ourselves.
Only if women are second-class citizens. There's no way around it. If they don't have a choice, then they're not full citizens.
Not all women feel that way, George.
Well, but then they don't have to do that.
Because we have plenty of Republican women.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of Republican women who don't take that point on abortion.
And I'll raise my hand as just being, I like the exceptions of rape, incest, health of the mother.
If tomorrow there was a report that says there were two abortions in Utah last year, and both of them were because the fetus, had no head, and that was it, because all the women involved made that choice, that would be great. We would have built a society where everybody feels safe and feels like if they have a child, they can raise it, they can take care of it. And
can the three of us
I love George. I want to have this conversation.
Yeah, and can all of us just agree that our gripe is that we didn't get more time to discuss that, and there's a lot more to be said.
Well, and people aren't washing their hands when they're walking out of the bathroom. That's my gripe. I saved it up for today. Wash your hands, people.
Yeah. Any quick gripe from you?
Oh, I wish the weather would make up its mind.
That's good. Well, it's been an exciting edition of Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been joined by George Pyle, the opinion editor of the Salt Lake Tribune.
On the left.
On the left.
Left, everybody.
And Senator Dan McKay on the right. Anthony Scoma is our producer. Thank you for listening.